Hello, and welcome again to Not Just a Rainbow Podcast. Today, Catherine is as usual with you, and we are going deep into the next uncovered topic. I hope you enjoy my project and please share my podcast with your friends. It will help me to discover new topics about LGBTQ+ society and others. Okay, let's start. Dr. Peggy Kleinblitz, a professor at the University of Ottawa, says that Valentine's Day is the worst time to be a sex therapist. It's when she sees the most unhappy and stressed out couples in her office. Having a lot of pressure and high expectations can really mess with your sex life, if you're already having a hard time. Turns out, sex isn't always as easy as TV and movies make it seem. Kleinblitz, who is a clinical psychologist and sex therapist, has been digging into the reasons why people aren't satisfied with their sex lives for years. In 2018, she wrote a review about the history of treating female sexual problems, looking at all the controversial ways women's sexuality has been looked at and treated over the years. She's in charge of the Optimal Sexual Experiences research team at the University of Ottawa, and in 2020, she wrote a book called Magnificent Sex: Lessons from Extraordinary Lovers, based on her research with couples. Her and her friends' research on improving your sex life is now being tweaked and shared with sex therapists. One reason why couples end up in your office is because they have different sex drives. Like, maybe one person wants to do it all the time, while the other is hardly ever in the mood. How often does this happen? This is like the number one issue sex therapists deal with. Couples come to us not because one person has a problem, but because they're not on the same page about how often they want to get busy, which we call sexual desire discrepancy. This can be a real issue because your sexuality is a big part of who you are. It sucks when your partner isn't in the mood for sex, and it's tough when you feel like you have to do it just to make them happy. A lot of couples base their self-worth on how well they match up with their partner's sexual desires. Let's take a look at both sides of the coin. So, there are some people out there with a really high sex drive. Back in the 1950s, the DSM manual had some pretty old-school ideas about sex. If a woman was super into it, they might diagnose her with nymphomania, while men with the same issue were called satyriasis. Women with nymphomania were treated with pretty extreme methods like shock therapy, or getting part of their brain cut out. But guys who were always down for some action? They were just considered normal. Then the sexual revolution happened and suddenly, it wasn't considered bad to have too much desire anymore. In 1980, the DSM-3 got rid of diagnoses for excessive desire, and instead focused on diagnosing low desire. Our diagnoses are supposed to be unbiased and based on facts, but looking at the history of how sexual issues are diagnosed shows a lot about our society's values. How have people's views on low sex drive changed for guys and gals over the years? In 1980, the folks who wrote the DSM were like, hey, we gotta address the gender bias in the first two editions. Then in 1987, they started calling it hypoactive sexual desire disorder for both guys and gals when not wanting to get busy causes some problems. But when we got to the 2013 DSM-V, they changed their minds once more. They decided to keep erectile dysfunction and hypoactive sexual desire disorder separate for men. However, for women, they combined them into female sexual interest arousal disorder. Do you think it was a smart move to put desire and arousal in the same category? When we say desire, we're talking about how often you want to have sex or think about it. And arousal is all about how your body and mind react to sexual stuff. I believe doctors need to figure out what's going on. If you tell your doctor you have a stomachache, they should try to figure out if it's food poisoning, an ulcer, or something more serious like cancer. Similarly, when it comes to sexual problems, it's important for doctors to determine if it's related to arousal or desire, no matter the gender identity of the patient. Should therapists suggest meeting halfway when it comes to different sex drives in a relationship? What do you think? That's a bad idea. Both people aren't getting what they really want. The therapists will just end up with angry patients who don't believe in their advice. One reason why it doesn't work is because the clinician is stuck focusing on treating a symptom, instead of getting to the root of the issue. The symptom could be pointing to a bigger problem like trouble dealing with conflict or problems with the quality of the sex. Basically, if you're not really in the mood for sex, it might just mean you have good sense and know what you like. Think about the last time you got busy. Did you feel excited and want more, or were you dreading it? It's totally normal to not be into sex if it's not something you enjoy. Has anyone actually done any serious research on how to go from lousy sex to mind-blowing sex? Most research has been about how to make bad sex less bad. But let's be real, who wants just not bad sex? We all want that mind-blowing, alive in each other's arms kind of sex. Back in 2005, we started looking into what makes some people's sexual experiences so damn fulfilling. We wanted to see what they were doing right so we could up our game too. What did you find out about awesome sex? Is it just about having orgasms? Basically, what we found is that awesome sex isn't just about using fancy techniques or toys to have mind-blowing orgasms like the media makes it seem. In our research, we found that what really makes sex great for people we call extraordinary lovers is more about deeper connections and less about following specific techniques. Every sexual experience is unique, but almost all of these extraordinary lovers mention the same 8 components and 7 factors that make sex amazing. What were these parts and things that made it easier? Many people talked a lot about feeling totally in the moment and alive, as well as being completely connected to the other person to the point where you feel like one. It's pretty amazing to be fully present and in tune with another person at the same time. The other stuff that was part of it included getting close in a sexy way, really understanding each other, being genuine, being open and taking some risks, having fun, and feeling like you're on top of the world. When I talk about understanding each other, I don't just mean talking, I mean really knowing your partner so well that you can almost feel their desires as if they were your own. One person said that feeling on top of the world was like floating in a universe filled with light, stars, music, and total peace. That's all. I hope you enjoy today's topic. Share my podcast with your friends and see you. All the best. Bye-bye.